Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello! Sorry, I'm terrible with names. And welcome to issue 154 of the... Oh, hang on, I've got a mnemonic for this one. Blazingly, unbelievably good laughs every time. The Buglet. Is that right? Can every time be one word? Hang on, I've got the backup mnemonic. Bugle, oogle, blurt, blur, Bugle! That's it. The official audio newspaper of the planet Earth with me, Andy's... that's gone too. Mnemonic time again. Zing! Another left twitching. Zing! Make a noise! Zoltzman, that's it. I'm live here in what's that place that Queen Victoria used to live? Oh, you know, burned down in 1666. No, not London, the place that John F. Kennedy snagged his corporate dukes on the railings outside Buckingham Palace trying to serenade Princess Margaret. London, that's it. And in New York City, it's the Pinky and Perky of punchlines. The man who will always be known to history as the founding father of the f***ology. It's John Oliver!
Hello, Andy. Hello, Buglers. Andy, later today, I'm doing a benefit gig for the Story Pirates, who are a great group who promote child literacy by helping kids write stories and then coming back to their school the next week and acting them out with puppets and songs. They're fantastic, and they're doing a benefit with different guests performing each of the kids' stories. I'm doing one, my boss is doing one, and Lou Reed is doing one too, Andy. I can't wait to see what story he gets given. I hope it's a story from a pretty dark kid, otherwise he is being wasted.
I hope
my
it's...
My one...
I hope one of the kids is going to just feed him all the dog puns that we did on the vehicle.
That'll be worth it. My one, surprisingly, Andy, is entirely in Spanish.
Oh, right.
Which is especially surprising because I don't speak Spanish, so for the rest of the day, I'm going to be learning lines in a language I do not understand. All I know is that I'm a security guard who is always dreaming of bread. That's the story from this kid, and my first line is, Hola, yo soy el agente de seguridad. So, let's see how it goes later, Andy. My guess is, no bueno. No bueno.
Well, there you go. are you going to actually learn what these lines mean, or just learn how to say them?
No, I think that will, I think it'll be more interesting performance if I'm just saying sounds, not even realising what sounds stop at what words.
Well, that's exactly what I did at my bar mitzvah.
Bad Jew.
Which, my brother and I, we were bar mitzvahed. we were taught to read and incant the passages, the relevant passages, but at no point were we taught what they actually meant. So, it was, I guess, on the tokenistic side of religion. But anyway.
You always said that Hebrew is 98% confidence, didn't you, Andy?
Yeah, that's it's all about styling it out, as Benjamin Netanyahu will tell you. So this is... Well, do say hello to Lou Reed from me.
Sure, will do.
It's been a long time. Didn't you find him sitting on your doorstep once?
I did, and I was listening to what song by the Velvet Underground was I listening to at the time?
The Birdie song, was that one of theirs?
Yeah, that was it.
Of course, as revealed on the Bugle, Heroin was the first dance at the royal wedding. So you can break the news to him; he'll be delighted.
Good choice.
Yeah. Did he do it live or not?
No, I believe they played a studio version of it. They're big fans.
Anyway, this is Bugle issue 154. 154, of course, not only the formation that Brazil played in the 1982 World Cup, but also the point in the countdown to the Apollo 11 launch that Neil Armstrong came on the radio to Mission Control and said, hey, quit dicking about, guys, and count backwards from 10, or I'm going to call you all on the moon. And 154 also, the marks out of 10 given by the three judges to William Shakespeare for his debut play Big Time Bertie and the Belching Banana in the 1589 series of Playwright Idol. Contemporary critics thought the judges had been, quote, lenient to the point of indulgence. And this is for the week beginning Monday, the 23rd of May, 2011, which you don't need me to tell you is World Turtle Day. So please do your bit for the turtle, whether by sticking one on a jet ski and firing out to sea at high speed just to give it a little taste of what life could really be like, or pimping out its shell with some bling, or just going easy on those turtle croquettes we all like to eat on a Monday, just for the day at least.
Yeah, and, go easy, whether they be of the Galapagos variety or the Teenage Ninja.
Yeah. And as always, a section of Bugle is going straight in the bin this week, with the experts predicting that the world will end or will have ended on Saturday, the 21st of May. That's tomorrow as we record, or yesterday if you're listening to this whilst floating through space, clinging on to a bit of what might once have been a bit of Albania, wondering what the f*** has happened to your planet. We present the exclusive Bugle End of the World supplement, including how to explain looming Armageddon to A, a baby, B, an optimist, C, an old person who might be a little confused and tell you that it already happened in 1960 with a Lady Chatterley trial, or D, a Belgian. I guess the easiest thing to say in that circumstances is just to say, no more waffles, ever.
Oh, no! God, that would be very hard for them to even hear as a joke.
Also, we tell you, if you've lived a dissolute or immoral life, we advise you how to brazen it out on Judgment Day. Be courteous and complimentary to your interviewer. Dress smartly, but not overly formal. And do not overuse the phrases, we all make mistakes, I'm my own biggest critic, or don't judge me. And do not say, well, what about you, big dog? You're not exactly Captain Perfect yourself, are you, Mr. I can't build a planet without it being vulnerable to natural disasters and unending suffering. And also we explain, if the world ends, what will happen to the Olympic ticket allocation process? What will it do for share prices? Where now for the derivatives markets? Will Bin Laden still be dead? Does this mean Colonel Gaddafi gets away scot-free? And would this have happened if Sarah Palin had kept her mouth shut? All in the bin.
Top story this week. If in doubt, keep it in your trousers. Andy, it's a universal rule in life that when a penis comes out of a pair of trousers, bad things may be about to happen. Could they be good bad things? Sure, possibly. But could they be bad bad things? You can't rule it out. Basically, it's always worth stepping back for a moment and considering whether it's either the time or the place for your proposed geniticular freedom. Don't get me wrong, Andy. Lots of good, biologically necessary things can happen when, how shall I put this, wangs take it outdoors for a hot second. But a good rule is, if you're not 100% confident in how your bratwurst is going to be received, keep it in your trousers. And there have been a number of examples this week of the perils surrounding this not remotely grey area. For instance, everyone has their own way of announcing that they're not running for office. There's no scientific right or wrong way. I, for instance, will be announcing that I'm not running for president next week by hanging from a helicopter over the Chrysler Building dressed as Joan of Arc and throwing out sweets with Maybe in 2016 on the wrapper. Everyone brings their own flavour to it. But it's worth noting that there is a legal right and wrong way. And Dominique Strauss-Kahn, the head of the IMF and frontrunner to be the next president of France, found himself on the wrong side of that felony fence this week. He was arrested and pulled off a flight back to Paris after a hotel maid alleged that he'd sexually assaulted her. And, I mean, you just have to hand it to him, Andy. And by it, I mean a pair of handcuffs and his right to a lawyer. But it's certainly an attention-grabbing way to shut down your campaign headquarters. It's doing it with a little je ne sais quoi. With a little, how do you say sexual assault in French, Andy? Actually, do you know what? I don't think there is a direct translation for that phrase in the French language.
So, yes, Strauss-Kahn, the head of the IMF, first man, of course, to be head of the IMF, the KLF and the WWF, heady cocktail of contrived sports, radical 1980s acid house music and top-level economics. Bit like the old TV dating game show Blind Date. But he's resigned after the latest incident in his long career of failing to keep it in his trousers. It's sort of his whole life really pans out as a kind of one-man peeneed, in a way. Kind of epic, epic tale. He resigned with, quotes, the utmost sadness and strenuously denies the accusations. Reports suggest that his likeliest defence is going to be that the act was, in fact, consensual. And whether or not this proves to be the case, I guess the main moral emerging from this story, John, is that when you are the head of an important global international organisation with more than half an arm becoming a country's next president, it is generally a good idea to keep it in your f***ing trousers!
Yeah,
For any French-speaking listeners such as Mr. Strauss-Kahn, who I'm sure is an avid bugler, or for any French-speaking listeners such as Mr. Strauss-Kahn, who I'm sure is as avid a bugler as the next head of a global organisation, réservez votre petit Napoléon dans votre pantalon, s'il vous plaît. Merci. Monsieur, où est mon baguettoscope? C'est dans le grenouillette. Et bah, bah. It's been a while. But anyway, it seems he has something of a reputation and track record for not keeping in his trousers and has written out proven affairs and accusations of sexual misconduct to maintain a place in the higher echelons of global and French politics. And there was a kind of interesting reaction in France when he was sort of paraded in front of the media on a so-called perp walk, Now, I hadn't come across this term before, John. Perp walk.
Yeah.
Is it part of everyday lingo in your country?
Especially in New York.
Right.
Yeah, people love a perp walk here.
Right.
Because they love seeing a perp walking.
I'd always assumed before this week that it was an unusually camp section in equestrian dressage. or an early prototype of Michael Jackson's moonwalk, kind of funky dance move that recreated someone withdrawing from a conversation due to serious stomach cramps after eating some undercooked chicken. Michael Bloomberg, the mayor of New York, said these words, John. He said, "I think it is humiliating," referring to the perp walk. "But," he said, "if you don't want to do the perp walk, don't do the crime." Hang on there, Bloomberg. Far be it from me to take issue with a man who is not only mayor of unquestionably one of the world's greatest 20,000 cities, but who is also one of America's most earningest businessmen.
Yeah.
Who, if he wanted to carry his personal $18 billion fortune around in his pocket, assuming that the only coin he can tolerate is the dime, would need a pocket with a volume of 61,000 cubic metres, or approximately the size of 24 Olympic swimming pools, which, frankly, would be a fashion faux pas even for a guy that rich, aside from being a logistical nightmare finding a fabric strong enough to withstand the 480,000 tonnes of loose change jangling around in the pocket, which would seriously restrict his movement. I mean, realistically, he'd have to spend his life sitting on a supertanker asking people to airdrop snacks on him. Anyway, the point is, John, he's rich and successful, and therefore one assumes... Yep. Not an idiot. But when he says, if you don't want to do the perp walk, don't do the crime, it does suggest a somewhat flaky grasp of the conventions of justice. I mean, no one is denying that what Strauss-Kahn is alleged to have done is far from the quality of behaviour you would hope for from either A, the head of an important global international organisation, or B, anyone. But the perp walk should ideally be done after the perp bit has become legally proven. Rather, once the perper has been proved to have perped his perp, I guess. So I guess what he should have said is, if you don't want to do the perp walk, don't be suspected of doing the crime, which would have been more realistic.
The scandal has come at a key moment for the IMF, which is currently trying to shore up some wobbly European economies. And the maid in question was apparently an African immigrant living in Brooklyn. So I think Strauss-Kahn's defence team might be looking to argue that, as head of the IMF, he was in fact just taking his daily job of attempting to... Africa slightly too far. And he was released on bail eventually yesterday. The court had initially denied him bail, but he just kept forcing the issue, Andy. The news has shocked France, but should they really be that surprised? Strauss-Kahn seems to have been, as you mentioned, a notorious sleazeball and professional creep. The French media had itself nicknamed him the Great Seducer, although it's worth pointing out that he's clearly not that great at it, as he can't complete his seductions without demonstrably breaking the law. It would somewhat affect history's view of Casanova, for instance, if it turned out that the Italian adventurer was little more than a serial sex offender. And let's remember that this is France we're talking about, Andy. This need not actually completely derail his presidential bid at all. There, having a mistress in politics is just seen as demonstrating the ability to multitask. Not to mention the fact that their version of Mickey Mouse is a sexually aggressive skunk. I distinctly remember, Andy, an episode of Pepe Le Pew where, to all intents and purposes, he raped a cat.
So that is covered by a super injunction, John. You cannot say these things about Pepe. His lawyers will be all over it. But inevitably, since he was arrested, Strauss-Kahn, the allegations of further Todger-related misdemeanours have surfaced, suggesting that he's never been quite as adept at keeping his trousers as might be ideal.
Mm-hmm.
Including yesterday, turned up some suggestions that he used the same escort service in New York as used by fellow keeping in his trousers struggler Elliot Spitzer.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, I think we have to try and see both sides of this, John. I mean, it might very well be that Mr. Strauss-Kahn's penis is an extremely gifted economist whose ideas on the global markets could help lift billions out of poverty. I mean, we don't know. I've never met him or his wang, and it might be that he merely takes his wang out in order to discuss economics, and it's often interpreted in the wrong way. But as you said, some might think it's strangely apposite that the head of a Western-dominated economic organisation should attempt to shaft anything that moves, particularly if it comes from the developing world. But please, I think as a general rule, John, it's a good idea as a major global figure to avoid finding yourself in a situation in which you can be described in public as being like a rutting chimpanzee. It just slightly... It slightly undermines Your moral authority, John.
It's completely consistent, this behaviour, Andy. He's never hidden the fact he is a total scumbag. There are rumours of a similar assault in a Mexico hotel and numerous other complaints about sexually inappropriate behaviour. In fact, his campaign slogan for the French presidency was going to be, "I won't take non for an answer." In fact, the only person defending him at the moment seems to be his wife, who released a statement saying, "I don't believe for one second the accusations against my husband." I think then the French press followed up that statement by saying, "Well, what if we give you another couple of seconds to think about it?" To which he said, "Yeah, okay, yeah, now I believe it. This seems behaviour entirely consistent with my douche nozzle of a husband."
The perp walk, incidentally, for those who are not familiar, has been an important and enjoyable part of the judicial process ever since Jesus was paraded around in front of the media and crowd in Jerusalem. And, of course, by Bloomberg's definition, he was definitely guilty, and we were spot on to literally bang him to rights. Ideally, I guess it should be known as the alleged perpetrator walk, or the Alley Perp walk, which, of course, is a pedestrian thoroughfare in Boston named after the 1890s baseball star Alley Perp, who not only invented the pioneering cobra ball, in which his arm would snake out from behind his back like an angry snake before he flicked the ball out venomously with his middle finger whilst hissing, but he was also the man responsible for the team becoming known as the Red Sox due to his pre-game habit of attempting to bring himself good luck by sacrificing an elk in the dressing room, then stamping around in its blood, calling upon a mixture of God, Thor and Zeus to help him pitch well. Now, John, Strauss-Kahn, of course, has not been the only one struggling to keep it in his trousers, as the world's continually expanding 7 billion-plus population can testify. Now, of course, as we say, getting it out of your trousers is not in itself wrong. It's just that there's a time and a place when it's appropriate, and people with whom those times and places remain appropriate. And Arnold Schwarzenegger seems to have fallen slightly on the wrong side of the keeping it in your trousers equation. He turns out he's been Schwarzenegging left, right and centre. transpired than did he negged his Schwartz to maximum possible effect into his former housekeeper, resulting in her giving birth to an android baby more than 10 years ago. Now, of course, John, let he who has never sapped a splacked a member of his household staff, resulting in fathering a secret love child that's kept secret from his wife in order to further his own personal political ambitions, cast the first stone.
Yeah.
Hang on, I actually am in that category. I think, Mr. Schwarzenegger, if that is indeed who you are, you big old philandering bastard, next time you're thinking of running for high office and parading your wife around with you as you do so, here's a suggestion for you. Keep it in your trousers. Of course, Schwarzenegger's found it. There is a time and a place to break such difficult news to a loved one. When you've just left office and don't therefore have such a pressing need for a publicly loyal wife, then without wanting to sound too much like a raging feminist, that is arguably a little bit rude. Even if you're a film star, I don't care how good you are at melting and reforming. It's low-grade behaviour. But this, John, was by no means the worst example of revealing past indiscretions at an awkward time. Think back just 3 weeks. Westminster Abbey. Prince William waits nervously at the altar, hoping that his bride and her sister's arse will both turn up as planned. He looks over his shoulder. A surge of relief. They're both there. But hang on. They're not alone. Who's that Kate has in tow? Only 6 small children she hasn't yet told William about. Ta-da! Here, kids. Here's your new stepdad. What a way to break that news. Of course, he didn't have a play, John. He did not have a play. He knew the cameras were on him. He had to style it out. But there was definitely a look in his eyes. He looked at those 6 very well-dressed young children that said, "You really should have told me about at least some of these kids. I don't care how nice your sister's patoot is. Any other bombshells to drop? I suppose now you're going to tell me you aren't even a professional ice hockey player. Was that really when Gretzky sort of go off on your left faloop-a-doop? Was it? It's just as far as I know, the great one was not a qualified calligrapher."
Even Bin Laden, Andy, even Bin Laden, it turns out, could not keep it in his robes. Because a stash of pornography was apparently found in the hideout of Osama Bin Laden by the US commandos who killed him. And some reports have said that Bin Laden may have used the porn on hard drives to hide his messages about attacks. And I guess that could be true, but could he also have been using messages about attacks to hide his massive porn collection? Osama? What's on your computer? Oh, it's just detailed instructions of how to attack US interests overseas. Oh, yeah? You better not have been watching Sperms of Endearment again. No, dear. No, I was plotting the death of thousands of innocent Western infidels. That better be true, you bearded horn dog. It was not exactly clear what the porn was, Andy, but people seem very interested to know whether or not it was American pornography, because if it was, that really does smack a little of hypocrisy. If he was, to put it nicely, demoting his field marshal with American assistance, then you start to doubt how much he really hated America deep down, or if he was a man just torn apart by the forbidden fruit. My man's telling me no, but my body's telling me yes.
What the hell was that? What the hell was that, John?
That was R. Kelly, Andy.
How was it?
He's about to kick in. I don't see nothing wrong. It's a classic.
Is it?
It's a classic.
Really? But perhaps
bump
Andy,
and grind,
explains
isn't
where.
I thought bump and grind was tactics in billiards.
Perhaps this explains where all of Bin Laden's extremism came from. A deep, deep physical frustration. I hate the West. Naughty West. Naughty, naughty West. Oh, you've been bad and you must be punished, West.
Is it possible that they planted this on him to, make him look worse?
Yes.
I mean, it's not making him look much worse, bearing in mind how worse he already was.
If they did plant it, Andy, they still did the right thing. It would have been wrong not to do that.
Okay. I guess, John, if he was using the pornography to convey messages to his followers, I guess that message would be, go out and act like massive c***s.
The Queen's speech news now! And with the royal wedding behind her, and confident in the knowledge that the British public are now yammering, not only for the end of her reign, but for the immediate abdication of King Charles and King William and the glorious coronation of Queen Pippa... Oh, Pippa. Sweet, sweet Pippa. Long live Queen Pippa.
I'll be her throne.
Queen of Britain's loins. The soon-to-be ex-queen took a headline...
I don't think you're ever going to be allowed back in this country after that, John.
Oh, Pippa. The soon-to-be ex-queen took a headline-grabbing trip to Ireland this week. It's the first visit by a British monarch in 100 years, and the first... since Irish independence. The relationship between Ireland and the UK has always been a little strained, Andy. We've had the kind of will-they-won't-they tension that you see in many a romantic comedy or, indeed, violent horror movie.
It was a bit of a messy divorce 90-odd years ago, and some people were left a bit stroppy still about the alimony settlements and who got custody of Northern Ireland. But it was a massively symbolic moment, John, and the Queen, of course, is the world's leading human symbol. That's yes. S-Y-M-B-O-L. Not C-Y-M-B-A-L. Although she does still give a fair clang when you bang her head together with another monarch. Depending, of course, on what metal their crowns are made of.
Much attention has been paid to the speech that the Queen gave during a banquet at Dublin Castle, where she offered her sincere thoughts and deep sympathy to the victims of Ireland and the UK's troubled past. She went on to say, "We can all see things which we would wish had been done differently, or not at all." And that is putting it very, very mildly, Andy. In fact, that's about as mildly as you can possibly put it while still referring to it at all. And it probably came off as, if not a tacit apology, at least an implicit implication of slight guilt. In fact, the BBC royal correspondent Nicholas Witchell said that while an apology was not expected, the Queen did come pretty close. And I'd go even further, Andy. I'd say it was tantalisingly close. I think the Queen was just teasing Ireland with this apology, making them want the whole thing even more. She was just giving them the tip of an apology, Andy, just the tip. And there is certainly a historical case to be made for the Queen giving Ireland the full business. President Obama, for instance, has been criticised by the right-wing media here for going on apology tours whenever he's abroad. And it must have been hard for the Queen to resist doing an actual apology tour of Ireland, just driving around in her car, waving out the window and mouthing, "Yeah, sorry about all that nasty business. Sorry. Don't know what we were thinking, really. Sorry. Thanks for coming out, yo. Sorry."
Well, she did have a tattoo on her back for the tour of the word "oops." So I guess that's pretty close.
It's hard to apologise effectively for what amounted to crimes against humanity in a banquet setting. It's a tricky atmosphere to talk about massacres. You don't want to put people off their pudding. And the dinner itself was pretty spectacular. It was said to be full of local Irish produce, so the Queen was probably expecting basically an open bar. Boom! Boom, Andy! I'm saying they drink a lot. Alcohol to the Irish is like waffles to the Belgians. It's catnip to those people. Surprisingly, the menu actually consisted of real food, such as cured salmon with burren smoked salmon cream, rib of Slaney Valley beef, ox cheek and tongue with smoked champ potato and soda bread sugar biscuits. The president's spokeswoman said it was drawn up to reflect the best of Irish produce. But what a huge missed opportunity, Andy. If the Queen had even a half a sense of humour, she would have waited for the main course and then leant over and stolen all the potatoes off the Irish Prime Minister's plate. How could she not do that? Engineer a situation where the Irish Prime Minister looks down to see all the potatoes gone and the Queen with a guilty look on her face. Or maybe even as they're lifting some potatoes to their mouth, the Queen should have just leaned in and eaten them right off the fork before jumping up and saying, "Gotcha again! Won't you people ever learn?" High-fiving her husband and moonwalking out of the castle shouting, "See you later, losers!"
But what's interesting about this, John, is that this really was a symbolic moment, but it really just sort of confirmed the reconciliation between our two nations that's really been going on for a long time. I mean, for years now, British football fans have been made to support the Ireland football team, even at early 1990s World Cups, despite the fact that team was quite stultifyingly tedious. And also the team was full of English players. So I guess it worked sort of both ways. British people have loyally bought records by hopeless Irish boy bands by the million, just in an effort to balm the wounds of history. You know, Boyzone, Westlife, U2, the Dublin Philharmonic Orchestra and Ladysmith Black Mambazo, to name just five. And I mean, we live and work in each other's countries, we drink each other's alcohol, we laugh at each other's comedians, some of them, not all of each other's comedians, as I found out at a gig in Killarney some years ago. Youch, I want an apology for that. The Queen's visit was very much the ceremonial slicing of the long-baked cake of reconciliation. And if there's one thing little Lizzie is well-practiced at, it's metaphorically slicing symbolic cakes. Some of the media, though, reacted as if she'd just started with a bag of flour, a pound of sugar and a broody-looking chicken before saying, "Come on, Defetta, my beaky friend, squeeze one out for Mummy." And then minutes later, been standing proudly on top of a 10-foot Battenberg, wielding a chainsaw and shouting, "Who wants a slice of Her Majesty's cake?"
The visit seems to have been largely viewed as successful, with people either not caring or being largely supportive of it. And I guess that shows just how bad things were, that you can chalk it up as a historic moment when you can visit a place and have people not give a shit about you being there. There were a few protesters who gathered on the streets of Dublin, branding Britain the neighbour from hell, but even those protesters didn't appear to have their heart in it. Only 50 of them actually turned up. And to put that in perspective, over 250 people turned up to Dublin Airport to see boy band Jedward come home after placing 8th in the Eurovision Song Contest. And I think those two numbers juxtaposed next to each other say more about improving Anglo-Irish relations than the Good Friday Agreement ever could.
A quick Middle East update after President Obama encouraged the observation of the pre-1967 borders between Israel and Palestine. The Israeli's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has responded by pointing to a Bible and saying, "Look, it's ours. It is ours. It's in black and white. It's still ours."
And terrible, terrible news in American politics this week, Andy. If you were watching, if anyone was watching MSNBC last Monday, and statistically they weren't, you'd have heard that Donald Trump... Yeah, take that. Donald Trump, otherwise known as the Donald or the real Mr. T, will not be running for president of the United States. And I guess when it came down to it, America just wasn't ready for a gold president. I can't believe he's done this to the country he claims to love, Andy. I mean, sure, he's done it before. He's flirted with running in both 2004 and 2008 and pulled out at the last minute. But this time, it seemed different. You're a tease, Mr. Trump. You offer yourself up for a full presidential run, then suddenly announce that you're not interested. You just blue-balled America. And sure, Andy, yes, he was down to only 8% support in the polls last week, but that's just because they weren't asking the right question. Pollsters were asking, do you want Trump to be president? Not, do you want him to run for president? America never wanted Trump to actually be president. They just wanted to have fun watching him try. Is that so bad? With the way the world is, do we not deserve something like this? It's not just that he was a joke candidate, Andy. It's that he was the perfect joke. He was a series of thousands of jokes all wrapped up in a golden buffoon. It's like Britain the Royal Wedding. We knew that was stupid. We knew it looked ludicrous and that it was an embarrassing waste of money, but we also knew how much it would entertain the world. Well, America has Trump. Trump is America's royal wedding, and he's just left them at the altar, Andy, and there is a void in his place now. None of the other Republican nominees have his sweet, sweet way with words. Do you really think that any of them would deliver a speech about China, as Donald Trump did, and say, and I quote, they want to go in and raise the price of oil because we have nobody in Washington that sits back and says, you're not going to raise that f***ing price, you understand me? Closing his speech by saying, listen, you mother f***ers, we're going to tax you 25%. Of course not. He's a foul-mouthed poet, Andy. Mr. Trump, you had me at raise that f***ing price. His voice is like m***ing honey, Andy, and I am a m***ing bee.
Your emails now. Thanks, your emails that have continued to cascade in, including someone saying that he's only recently started listening to the Bugle. And has been listening to the back catalogue, which is available via the RSS feed, in alarming quantities.
Yeah.
To such an extent that he concludes the email by saying, P.S., bring back the audio cryptic crossword.
Well, don't say that. Don't say that.
You can't fight quality, John.
Yes, you can, to the death.
That was the greatest crossword that's ever been written.
Let that sleeping corpse lie.
So, congratulations, Zach Bullpit, for A, your spectacular name, and B, liking the audio cryptic crossword. And this one comes in from Gabrielli, who writes on the subject, Pippa. Hey guys, love the show. That's great. That makes me feel like a radio presenter.
Yeah, that's good. First time, long time.
That is not what a guy said. I did a gig in Aldershot last Saturday. Do you remember the old West End Centre, John?
I do.
I think they've just about finished bagging and labelling the Edinburgh preview we did together there in 2004. Anyway, so I was telling the story about Horace being born that forms the sort of 20 minutes at the start of my live show from Edinburgh last year. And anyway, it was all going fine. In fact, it was going quite well for a fairly sparsely attended gig. And then at the end of it, I mentioned my son, and this guy stood up and said, your children are boring, and left. So, that is it. He's heckling my absent children.
Wow. That's a rough heckle, yeah, Andy.
Because that is saying, not only are you shit, but your shitness is a dominant gene. You have passed it on to the next generation. But then, in extremely bad etiquette, he'd gone by the time he finished his heckle and he was out, so he didn't even stay for the put-down.
Oh,
and that's, you know, I mean, that just shows a declining standard of behaviour in British society. I mean, that is basic manners, isn't it? You're going to heckle, you've got to stick around for the comeback.
Yep.
Anyway, Gabrielli writes, just wanted to let you know that, as an Italian, the way John says, oh, Pippa, is far more disturbing, considering the fact that Pippa is an Italian common term for male masturbation.
Oh, dear. Well, is that... Well, hold on. Has that always been the case, or was that true of 2.5 weeks ago?
I don't know. But I'm afraid, John, it's put you very much in the same ballpark. And this one comes in from Amy Carter, who you may remember won the Bugle Coat of Arms competition. And when I get around to it, we'll be receiving a complete and broken Primton Charles and Diana mug. She writes on the subject, you like me, you really like me. Dear John, Andy and F.U. Chris, I can't believe I won the Coat of Arms contest. This is the greatest day of my life. There are so many people I need to thank. all of the Facebook friends that I bribed into voting for me. I knew Lana would be tough to beat. Her use of the cricket bat and balls was inspired. Her drawings of Andy and John were adorable. And Henry VIII with his bodiless wife was a classy, classy touch. This is truly an honour. I would like my Charles and Diana Cup in smashed form for the following reason.
Good choice.
I'm sure there are many such mugs in existence, but like snowflakes, no two can be smashed exactly alike. If I receive it in its own unique configuration of broken pieces, I will know it has the Bugle stamp on it. In fact, the greatest honour will be if John, Andy or Chris were to stamp on it personally. So, it's heading on its way to Edgewater in...
Wow.
MD. What's that, John? What's MD?
Maryland.
Maryland.
Maryland, Andy.
Yeah, yeah. That's not an important one, is it? So there you go. It's on its way to Maryland. And, John, I've just got a ticket to see you at the Warner Theatre in DC in October. How about that?
What? Is that... Oh, that's Amy saying that.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that I was going to... That seemed odd coming out of your
face, well,
Andy.
Yeah, I'm going to be heading over for your wedding around then. I thought I might stick around and see you do a gig.
That's right. I'm at the Warner Theatre in DC.
Right.
I don't know when. Hold on. Let me look that up.
Well, it's October. But I can alert Buglers to this Saturday in Leeds, Sunday in Buxton, next Friday in Cambridge, and next Sunday in Barnsley. I'm doing the hot spots of Britain. John, is the only town where I've ever done a gig and left the venue by the back entrance to avoid having to walk through the crowd. At the Birdcage. Did you ever play the Birdcage?
No.
Man, that was a tough gig. That was a tough, tough gig. Sport now! And next Saturday, John, is the Champions League final in the ancient British sport of football.
Yes.
Which you might remember from your time as a British person.
Vamos, Barcelona. Vamos.
And,
there you go. I'm just trying to get my Spanish ready.
That's right. You're bang up there. Yeah. Longer-term bugle to remember that 2 years ago, the Champions League final was between Barcelona and Manchester United, team sponsored respectively by UNICEF and the discredited and bailed-out insurance company AIG. Now,
it was good against evil.
It was, and good won 2-0. And in fact, Good took Evil to school and put it in detention and sent it home with his clothes in a wet bag. Anyway, but the same two are meeting this year's final, 2011, and it's going to be a tough task for Man United, John. Barcelona star man Lionel Messi, the greatest Lionel in the history of all sports. He's now surpassed the achievements even of other great sporting Lionels, such as Lionel Jeter. Derek's younger brother, briefly first baseman in the very minor leagues for the Fort Knox Cox. And also the pop legend Lionel Richie, who of course reached the quarterfinals of the World Snooker Championships in both 1977 and 1978, losing respectively to John Pulman of England and South Africa's Perry Mans. Sorry, I'm mixing him up with the former world number 5 from Birmingham, Graham Miles. Hey, what is it with the women Lionel Richie fancies? You're once, twice, three times a lady? That means you must have been at least twice a man. Now, I understand that gender identity issues can be troublesome, but now you're just being attention-grabbingly indecisive. And there you go. Do you want us a little snippet into Andy Zaltzman circa 2000? On the stand-up circuit.
There you go. That's the kind of routine that antagonised the people of Leeds to the extent to which you had to leave out the back.
I think had I had that, I'd have probably gone better. And in other sports, the Italian government has announced plans to build a new Machiavellodrome for young Italians to simultaneously ride bicycles really fast and hone the art of amoral and manipulative politics.
Oh, boy. Now, hold on. Andy, that is... That's very, very good.
Oh, thank you, John. I'm touched.
Look, now, two weeks ago, we coined f*** eulogy. I think the Machiavellodrome is up there.
I don't think it's got quite as much practical use, John.
No, it doesn't have as much practical use. Possibly doesn't have the broad appeal, but that is inspired, Andy.
Anyway, a spokesman for Italian politics and cycling said, "These are two invaluable life skills all Italians should have. If you can keep fit and exploit the public for your own political ends, so much the better." Well, there you go. That's it for this week's Bugle. Thank you very much for listening, Bugle. Buglers, do keep your emails coming in to thebugle@timesonline.co.uk. Follow the Bugle Twitter feed @HelloBuglers. And you can still contribute to the Bugle fundraising for Bliss. charity for premature babies that's currently raised £1,900 for my children jumping over a few bales of hay. So, well done them. Bye-bye.
Bye!